You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM.
On Tuesday, over 100 people gathered at the site of the old Pantages Theatre in Vancouver's downtown east side. The site, now rubble, is slated to become a new condominium tower called Sequel 138. Over 60 of the people gathered proceeded to paste declarations saying they would stop the development of the condo project no matter what. The community members then marched to the BC Housing Agency's office in the downtown east side, occupying it for half an hour. This is all following a news leak that BC Housing bailed out the condominium project to the tune of an immediate $3.75 million loan, with promises of a further $20 million to help with construction. Ivan Drury is an organizer with the Downtown Eastside Not for Developers Coalition. He joins me by phone this morning. Hello, Ivan, and welcome to Red Eye.
Thank you, Peter.
So why is this loan being called a bailout?
Well, it's being called a bailout because that's what it is. The Sequel 138 condo development, Mark Williams' project at the Pantages site, could not survive, could not happen without this public subsidy of the project. Back in the early summer, Williams was facing foreclosure from a private banking institution. He had twice defaulted on his mortgage agreements, which at that time was running him 11.8% interest. And at the very last minute before the foreclosure was going ahead to court, BC Housing stepped in and bailed him out with an initial payment of $3.75 million, initial loan of $3.75 million. To aid in the cleanup and site preparation and basically to save him from that foreclosure, and with a $20 million promise for an additional loan for construction. And the interest rate that BC Housing gave him is what makes it a bailout, as well as saving him directly from the foreclosure. The interest rate they gave him was 1.2% interest, down from 11.8% interest. This is even lower than BC Housing's, as far as we understand, is lower than their standard supportive interest rate that they offer to nonprofits, which is about 2%. So BC Housing is really giving Mark Williams and the Sequel 138 development their approval and their support.
That's incredible. So it's bailing out a condo for a lower rate than loans to housing, to social housing.
Right. As far as we understand, this is the first time that BC, or as far as we know, this is the first time that BC Housing has bailed out a private condo developer and supported a private condo development anywhere in the city. One of the things we did on when we rallied at the site on Tuesday was paste a big sign up there that said BC Housing's first condo. But we want to point out that having a reduction in interest rate from 11.8% to 1.2% is really significant. And if that was what the market was commanding, it means that BC Housing is supporting Mark Williams, saving Mark Williams about $2 million a year. And with that $2 million, there is work that BC Housing could be doing for the interest of the low, in the interest of the low-income community and in the interest of low-income people in the city, rather than supporting a single investor and property owner who's looking to make a lot of profit on this project.
So, our public social housing agency is loaning him money. Why aren't banks doing this? Why is it our social housing agency?
That's a good question. I think that the reason a private bank would not loan him money, or that he didn't get a loan. I think he did have loans with private banking institutions, and he was being foreclosed on by those banks. And BC Housing is the agency that stepped in to help him. Of course, Mark Williams accepted an incredibly depressed interest rate from BC Housing. Why would he not? Why would he turn back to a private bank to do this? But the critical thing for us is that BC Housing is supposed to be in the business of building housing for low-income people, for people who can't survive in the real estate market, and to support people against the worst impacts of real estate capitalism. And instead, we're getting the subsidy of a major property developer, and for a project that is one of the most contentious condo projects in the city now, one that there has been an active community campaign against for 2 years. and which has collected thousands of signatures opposing the project and calling for 100% social housing on this site. So this site is an extremely significant one for the low-income community, and I think that BC Housing is blocking with this developer as a blow against this community, and that's what's so significant here.
And how did BC Housing justify providing the loan, publicly justify providing this loan?
Their public justification, as quoted in the province newspaper, was that this project will revitalize the 100 block of East Hastings. And that's the same thing that Mark Williams has said since the application started for this project. He said that the 100 block of East Hastings is a dead zone where no one lives and where there is nothing but rats and drug dealers. He posted posters on the hoarding of his demolition site before it came down, saying that the site will displace no one but rats and drug dealers. And this is the sort of messaging that he repeated over and over again. BC Housing is joining in with that messaging and also saying that this block is in need of revitalization. But from a low-income community perspective, this block, the 100 block of East Hastings, is the heart of the community, and it's one of the most vital places in the city. About 1,000 low-income people live on this block. It's got to be the most high-density, low-income community space in the whole city. It's also home to some of the most important community spaces that have been fought for and won through the endless and tireless volunteer work of low-income community members. InSight, the North America's only supervised injection site, is on the 100 block, as well as OnSite, the treatment center above it. The Carnegie Center, which serves thousands of people low-cost food and does arts and community programming for low-income people every single day of the year, is on the 100 block. The Downtown Eastside Women's Center, which is the only space run by and for Downtown Eastside women that provides safe space for women and their children, is right there on the 100 block, and as well as Aboriginal Front Door, which is also the only space run by and for Aboriginal people in the Downtown Eastside, is right there on the corner of the 100 block. These spaces are all critical to the low-income community and is the furthest thing from a dead zone. But BC Housing is supporting, unfortunately, this gentrifying myth and this idea that there is nothing there and that the only way to have development and life in the 100 block is to have market condo development.
Well, I think your choice of words for the community's vitality being located there cuts straight to the contradiction of the term revitalization.
That's right, and it's consistent with the language of gentrification that's used all around the world, and the idea that which is a colonial logic, which is that there is nothing there, there is a blank slate, and that the only way to bring life and vitality to the area is through the introduction of the and strengthening of the market in the space rather than human life.
In 2005, the City of Vancouver released a Downtown Eastside housing plan, which stated that 5,000 units of social housing were needed to stop displacement of people due to to stop the displacement of people from gentrification. How does Sequel 138 condo project fit into this need for 5,000 units? Because there are social housing units in the condo.
Right. So this is what is so significant about this project in general, is that the Sequel 138 condo development is in a sub-district of the Downtown East Side, which is called the Downtown East Side Oppenheimer District. And in 1982, when the development plan was made for the Oppenheimer District, there was some progressive planning done at that time. And the planners said that this area has to be protected for the low-income community. So 20% of any development in the Oppenheimer district has to be social housing. The effect of that, bylaw, is that is not to create social housing really, but to hold back condo development by depressing the land values, by de-incentivizing the development of high-end market condos in that district, because developers have been less keen to build in a place where they have to include social housing. It means that the property values have been held down and market condo developments have been suppressed. Now, Williams' project is the first condo development to be built within that 20% social housing zone. And so if he can make a go of it, it changes the meaning of that 20% social housing. And it changes from being something that holds the market back and protects the space for social housing developments built by the state, and turns that 20% into kind of a kickback or a bit of crumbs for the low-income community, which will be displaced by gentrification at a much higher rate than that 20% will provide housing. So that 20% will become just a very minor salve to an ever-opening wound if these condos are allowed to be built. The social housing provision in this project, which is 97 units overall, and about 20 of them will have to be condos. It's actually like 18 of them will be condos. It's just under 20%, About 18 of them will be social housing, and just less than half of them, 8 or 9 of them, he says, will be social housing at welfare and pension rate. These social housing units have to be managed by a nonprofit society that's reputable. As with everything else with Williams's project, there is no reputable partner involved in it, and it's a housing agency that was only constituted after his development permit hearing was finished. So it was only constituted in June of 2012. It's never run a housing project. It is not a proven agency. But the government seems so eager to have this go ahead that BC Housing is throwing money even at this unproven and untested rookie housing provider that no one even knows who they are. So the danger here is that this 20% social housing, if it's converted from a mechanism to hold back market development and turned into one to provide social housing, first it's turned into a joke because the kind of housing we get out of it is insubstantial and pales in comparison to the amount of condos that we get. And secondly, it will never be enough to replace the 5,000 units of hotels that the 2005 housing plan says need to be replaced. To have those 5,000 units replaced in the downtown east side will require a concerted effort of building major social housing projects in the downtown east side. To replace them at 20% means that we will have it will be 20% of so many more condos. So we will have many, many thousands of condos in order to get 5,000 units of SROs. It means that there will be so many condos in the downtown east side that people will have been displaced from the community long before that 5,000 replacement target is replaced. And all that we'll be doing is shifting low-income people out of the downtown east side, displacing them out of the downtown east side into other spaces where there is absolutely no housing for them, and where this problem will be moved rather than solved.
So not only is it going to make it harder to meet those 5,000 units of social housing that are in dire need of new units, but it'll make it harder to preserve the units that need upgrading to be within code and so forth.
That's right. So not only because of the impossibility of doing it with time, but also the land value will be driven up by the development of these condo projects. So it will become more expensive for the government to build social housing. And the reason that the Oppenheimer District is designated as the space to replace these hotels is because the land value has been held down. So it's more affordable for the state to build social housing in this area, and it's more attractive as a social housing catchment area. By driving up the land value, it removes that incentive for building social housing there, and it makes it just another space in the city. It removes the low-income character of the area and displaces the low-income community.
Why is it so important for the coalition to focus on this one project?
Well, this is the reason, because it's the first project in the downtown Eastside Oppenheimer district, and it will be the one that proves whether condos can make a go of it or not in the Oppenheimer district. I know of other sites in the Oppenheimer district that have been combined by speculators and investors and are waiting for evidence that the market can sustain and support condo developments in the Oppenheimer district. If condos are able to be built at Pantages, Williams is able to sell them and make money, and the project works from a market perspective, then it will unleash a torrent of gentrification in the Oppenheimer district, where attuned investors will see low property values that they can buy up and convert into expensive condos within a very short period of time, and that'll be a disaster for the low-income community. And on the other side, if we can show that the low-income community can bound together with allies from around the city and fight against this condo development and stop it, Now it will take acts of civil disobedience and actions in the streets, as well as building support and blocks with allies around the city. If we can stop it now, we will show that we will not tolerate any condo development in the Oppenheimer District, and we will show that this area must be a social justice zone, a space where people's lives matter more than profit, and that no condo developers are welcome there. And it will be a positive message from our side.
And then, and just really quickly, Ivan, in concrete terms, how can people support that fight?
Well, because we're kind of near the end of December now, so in January there's going to be a number of actions that the coalition, Downtown Eastside Not for Developers Coalition, will be taking. And some of those, like I said, will be actions that we need supportive allies to take on. And I think that those will be targeting some of the supporters of this condo project. BC Housing, for one, then City Credit Union, who is providing a mortgage support to individuals to buy projects in here. We need to send a message to them that this is not a progressive project and needs to be opposed. And targeting the sales center and calling for a boycott of these condos directly. These will be things that we need allies to take on and support the low-income community in the Downtown East Side in this fight. So stay tuned to the Downtown East Side Not for Developers Coalition website, which is dtesnotfordevelopers.wordpress.com. And there will be a call out for letters coming soon as well, and those letters could be going to various different targets, as well as we will be organizing more demonstrations and actions. We need to have a presence in the streets, as well as making them feel it in the boardrooms on this one.
Thank you so much, Ivan, for joining me this morning and illuminating the issue and calling for support in the struggle.
Thanks a lot, Peter. I appreciate it.
I've been speaking with Ivan Drury. Ivan is an organizer with the Downtown Eastside Not for Developers Coalition. If you'd like more information on their campaign for 100% social housing on the old Pantages Theater site, you can visit, as Ivan said, dtesnotfordevelopers.wordpress.com.